I got to send you the picture I took that your wife took of us last night.
Yeah.
It's there too. And I, you know, when Serena said, oh, it's going to show up on your Facebook, she put, I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to today. Just say, ran into two interesting people last night. Not sure who they are, but they were very friendly. Might have been a couple, very friendly. You're in the foreground, big head, smiling. I look like I'm, frankly, I look not so great. And then Serena's off smiling uncomfortably. Yeah. It's a picture for the ages.
Yeah, send it to me.
All right, the city council come back from recess. Carla, we're going to take testimony and we'll hear all the. If it's okay with council, I'd like to hear all the rates proposals, and then I'll take testimony en masse on anybody that wants to talk about any of them. So, could you please read the title for non-emergency ordinances? 508, 509, 510, they're all related to rates.
508, revised residential solid waste and recycling collection rates and charges effective July 1, 2012. 509, revised sewer and drainage rates and charges in accordance with the fiscal year 2012-2013 sewer user rate study. And 510, authorize the rates and charges for water and water-related services during the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2012 to June 30, 2013, and fix an effective date.
And then also item number 536.
Revised transportation fees, rates, and charges for fiscal year 2012-13 and fix an effective date, allow for disposition of asphalt, concrete, rock, dirt, and leaves, and establish rate-setting authority, and amend city-owned parking garages, rules of conduct, and establish rate-setting authority.
All right. Let's begin a staff presentation on solid waste and recycling.
Good morning. Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and with me today here is Bruce Walker, Solid Waste Manager. We're here to discuss the solid waste rates. To provide some context, I want to provide just a very brief overview of our new collection system. The new program began on October 31st, and the new system has three components. First, families can now compost their food with their yard debris. This is collected every week in the green cart. Second, recycling continues to be picked up every week in the blue cart, with glass going in the yellow bin. And third, garbage is now collected every other week. The goals of this new system are to reduce garbage going to the landfill, create compost, a valuable commodity, and to increase the overall recycling rate. So, how did we do? The results have been amazing. There has been a 44% reduction in garbage. Portlanders...
Lost your video, or your PowerPoint.
That's too good of a slide not to keep up there.
There you go. So we did comparisons of January through March of this year versus last year, and there's a reduction in garbage of 44%. So Portlanders are composting, they're putting food in their yard debris, and they're recycling more. And to get us to this point, we've done a tremendous amount of outreach and engagement. We've added temporary customer service staff, extended our hours to evening and weekends. We had 10,000 calls over the first 2 months. But those are now down back to normal levels. The top reasons for calling the hotline were to request schedule information, also to request a kitchen compost pail, or to ask specific questions about what goes in the green cart. To ensure that people were feeling comfortable with the new system, we enlisted more than 100 volunteers. They were out in the neighborhoods and had one-on-one conversations during April. We're continuing that through May, and we've reached 14,000 households. We're also going to dozens of fairs and community events to provide additional assistance and be available to answer questions. We also have developed a new web tool. How many of you have this on your, hopefully it's on your phone or your email. You can enter your address and your collection schedule will pop up so you can know what days are your garbage days and which ones are your recycling compost only. You can also sign up for an email reminder, or you can do like I did and sign your kids up for the email reminder, and then they have no excuse for not taking the carts down to the curb. So it's important to note that the drop in residential garbage is unprecedented. The tonnage has always been around 22,000-23,000 tons per quarter, and you can see that the drop since the program started has been substantial. The second to last bar on the right includes 1 month of the old system, October, and 2 months of the new system, November and December. And the last bar then shows January through March, a complete quarter with the new system. Weekly pickup of the green carts and compost has also been amazingly successful. Compared to last year, we are on track to triple the tonnage. So we estimate close to 90,000 tons of compost, food, and yard debris together for 2012. So we're 6 months into the program. We will continue to monitor the results, and we'll get back to you with more information in the fall with more complete data. So now let me turn to the residential rates. The proposed rate increase for next fiscal year is 4.2% for the average customer, or about $1.20 per month. The average customer uses a 32-gallon can or a 32 to 38-gallon roll cart. This chart here shows the rates for each service level. The first six rows all receive every other week garbage collection and range from $24.85 a month to $43.80, depending on size and container, from the 20-gallon mini can to a 90-gallon roll cart. The next two rows show rates for those households that choose to get garbage service just once every 4 weeks, and the last row is for families that choose to have no garbage service, just recycling and composting. And for those households, and really for any of us, you can put out an extra can, just once in a while, or an extra bag for $5.
These are monthly rates.
These are monthly rates. the next slide shows the effect, the factors that affect cost of service. The first one there is fuel and labor costs. Those are forecasted to go up 60 cents per household per month. Investments in new trucks add an additional 90 cents. Lower revenue from the sales of recycling adds 37 cents. What a lot of people don't understand is that the haulers actually sell the recyclables, and the value of those materials is deducted from the cost of service. So the value of the recyclables goes up and down. It's kind of dependent on world markets, which can be very volatile. In recent years, the sale of recycled materials by the haulers has lowered rates by about $1.10 per household per month. Next year, world markets are forecasted to drop, and it will affect it with a 37-cent increase. Another cost is that Metro's tipping fee at the landfill has gone up, and that adds 12 cents to monthly bills. So those are all the increase in costs. They add up to $1.99. On the other side of the scale, improvements and efficiencies from the new collection system have actually lowered overall operating costs by 79 cents per month. An example of lower costs is that when you take the food waste and composting to tip that, that is a lower tipping fee than it is to tip garbage at Metro.
So let me just make sure I understood that. So the new program of every week curbside composting, every week recycling, and every other week garbage pickup has actually saved the overall program money and therefore reduced the increase necessary to keep the overall garbage collection system going.
Yes, so it would have been a $1.99 increase, and efficiencies are related to tipping fees difference and also efficiencies in terms of labor a little bit.
So, Mayor, may I just have a couple of questions on that table? If the recyclables have gone up three times, what's their, even though they're getting less in revenue than was projected, they're still having three times more to sell to recyclables?
The food waste and curbs and the yard debris has gone up three times. Recycling has not gone up three times. Recycling has gone up about 12%.
And how is that reflected in the rate? Because they get more money for that 12% going.
Yeah, out. And that's in the rate. So we do both we look at what are the world markets. We do an estimate, and cities all over the country do this, and we kind of do it together. So we have the rate, and then we multiply that by the expected tonnage, and we include the increase in tonnage that we anticipate.
And what's the revenue from the yard debris recycling being turned into compost?
That's also in the rate.
It's a cost for to deliver that material to the compost facilities.
But then don't we sell the compost?
The facilities sell the compost, but it is incorporated in their overall what they call tip fee. So it's anticipated of that revenue they receive.
But they've now got three times more compost to sell. How
right.
is that reflected in the rate?
It's reflected in the tipping rate. And so currently there's a couple places to take it. And that rate, the tipping rate there, is much lower than it is to do garbage. And so my assumption will be, as we have more supply of this going to them and they can make more money at it potentially, they will reflect that in the tipping rate that's charged to us.
But it's not reflected right now. And they've got three times more compost to sell, so I don't see where that's reflected in the rate.
Right, we can only do what their cost of service is. If there were eight places to take it, and we had competition, more competition on that, then there may be a way to forecast how that rate could be reduced. We don't have a way to do that.
More information on this before we vote next week. My other question on this is about the less polluting trucks.
So before, if you don't mind, I just want to make sure that in terms of overall, that our approach, because this is a public-private, I mean, this is a private sector delivered service on a franchise basis, a regulated franchise basis, that just overall speaking, to follow up on Commissioner Fritz's questions, you have made assumptions about the revenue they collect for the various items that they take to a site, and whether it's a transfer station, a composting facility, a landfill, what have you, and you've also made assumptions then of their revenues from that, and that this is a open book process in terms of you get to look at their books and determine whether or not these forecasts are achieved. I mean, you're making forecast. You have to make forecasts like we all do in terms of costs and revenues,
right.
And then as we go along next year, it can be trued up.
So that's all correct. We do not set the tipping rates for either garbage or for the food waste and yard debris. Metro does that. So we do not have access, open books, like you said, to how the companies who run where the compost is going.
I understand that. We're seeing on this table that their rates, the customers are going to be paying more because of the drop in recyclable material value, but we don't see anything on this chart to show that we've got 14% more recyclables and three times more compost that's being sold. So I'd like to get more information on that before next week.
Okay.
My other question on this table is about the less polluting trucks. I understand that this has been in progress for a long time, that we wanted to move to cleaner trucks. What's the timeline for this? When will we be done paying for the new trucks? And at that point, will the rate go down?
We are scheduled to have, at this point, by the end of 2013, all trucks to meet the standards. However, we're considering that we might want to look at, should we push that out a couple of years or not? The rate impact is ongoing. As they depreciate those equipment, it's like all their other equipment. So the
cleaner trucks are more expensive as well?
Yes. The cleaner trucks, depending on, you know, every hauler buys a little bit different truck, but generally they have to meet certain standards. The cleaner trucks can be anywhere from $30,000 to $40,000 more.
Thank you.
So, but I was confused by your answer on the savings of 79 cents. That includes the savings from having the new service, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so Commissioner Fritz wants that's broken out in more detail.
That'd be great. We could do that. Okay, so one final area to cover quickly is commercial tonnage fees. So the commercial tonnage fee is charged per ton on all garbage collected from businesses and multifamily units over four units, so anything over a fourplex. These fees are used to manage and enforce the commercial solid waste recycling and composting programs. We are proposing to increase the tonnage fee by $1.50 per ton to cover costs related to enforcement and management of the commercial program. Again, we need to do this for a couple of reasons. One is because Metro, because of their budget issues, has cut funding to us by $190,000 a year. So that's the primary reason. And then we also have some increased costs related to public place, garbage collection, and recycling. All right, that's it.
All right, we have a member of the PERB here to talk about solid waste. Vince Slowowski?
Slowowski?
Slowowski, please come forward. Thanks for your service. You're going to give us thoughts on this rate request.
So for the record, I'm Vince Slowowski, representing the PERB. I'm small business representative.
Portland Utility Review Board, right?
Yeah, Citizen. Portland. Thank you. Okay. Portland Utility Review Board. As you guys can see from this handout we've given, the PERB supports the increase proposed by PPS and the solid waste and recycling rate increase of 4.2% for the fiscal year 2012 to 2013. Our thinking on it was that although there it is an increase, and it's an increase ahead of CPI again this year, historically we've done quite well in the last 20 years with respect to rate increases in the city over the 20-year period, and PERB supports the new initiatives that BPS has put forth, particularly the green fleet policy and the curbside recycling program that was just discussed. A little bit more background on a recommendation. I think the solid waste franchise agreement revision is coming up for the franchisees. It's the midterm review. They run on a 10-year schedule, and every 5 years it's reviewed, and PERB would like to attend that for the purpose of trying to get more timely information so that we can audit these rate increases with a little less pressure, because we receive information from the franchise agreements with just a few, literally about a week, I guess, before we have to come before you guys. We have a very compressed time period in which to make a decision on whether or not we approve the proposed rates, so it's always kind of a scramble. And we would like to get the detailed cost reports that the haulers are required to provide on an earlier basis, so we can take all the information from the haulers and review that information and then hold that up against the rate increases that are being proposed. The second issue that we wanted to talk about was the clean fleet policy that Commissioner Fritz just asked about. As you noted, that policy has resulted in about 75% of the proposed rate increase. It's 90 cents of the $1.20 increase for this year. And as was discussed, it seems to be basically a perpetual upgrade requirement where rates are going to be affected every single year, not just through 2013, but on an ongoing schedule. And there's a draft proposal produced by Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to relax the criterion for upgrading the fleets, and we feel like that we would like to support that, or we would at least like to have that discussed so that we can see if there's a way to mitigate these constant impacts on rates. And that's about all I have to say, unless you guys have some questions.
Also, thank you for your service. So you're asking that the PERB, your first point was that the PERB would be a party or privy to reviewing franchises with Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and the haulers?
We would like to attend the franchise review to request that the franchise agreement be amended such that the franchisees are required to provide us with detailed cost report information on a more timely basis.
Oh, so you want that in the franchise? That's what you're.
Yeah, we would like to amend the agreement, because as it is, it's too difficult to get all these numbers within a week of coming before City Council and having to parse everything and make a decision within the PERB as to whether or not we support rate increases. And franchise agreements are a big part of that.
Is there any issues around proprietary information that would prevent something like that?
They could definitely be part of the conversation and making sure that item that he just mentioned is a part of the looking at it. We currently we can't get all the information until April, and so it is always a rush. It's a rush for all of us, and we give them some information up front, but we can't give them a final number until just 10 days before they have to come here. So
they can be covered in the confidentiality agreement.
Okay.
Yeah. Or choose not to, and we could just show them other parts of the.
And I also appreciate your points about the clean fleet, although I will take responsibility as when I was commissioner in charge of the Office of Sustainable Development, we did, I believe I helped initiate the clean fleet policy, which is the mm-hmm. whole idea of getting better, efficient, cleaner diesel fuels or diesel trucks on the roads. Also understand waste management is actually converting its fleet to compressed natural gas. So these are good things for air quality. But I do have some concerns about maybe it is appropriate to relax the compliance date given its rate impact on people.
And you know, this isn't some wacky idea that Portland's doing. Right. Seattle did it years ago. San Diego, all along the West Coast, they've already shifted to these trucks over the past decade. So we're just kind of coming in the door now and catching up.
And PURB agrees the only thing we're worried about is just a consistent annual onerous increase to ratepayers on this rate schedule.
Thank you all very much. Can we hear now from the folks at, is it sewer or water? Sewer.
Well, Ed, can I ask Susan one more question?
Yeah.
Susan, we talked about this last week, but a lot of people who are getting used to the new program, you know, the council did make a commitment to review issues around every other week pickup and things like that. So just tell us again when that review of the program is going to occur.
We had planned to do it in the fall when we have more complete information. If there is a huge push by all of you to want to do that sometime soon, I'd really like to have at least, you know, 6 months of good data so that we don't get called one way or another, you know, the amount of garbage, the amount of recycling, the amount of food waste changes throughout the year. So at least having 6 or 8 months of data would be a good thing.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I just want to make sure it's, yep. the public knows that. And I also think it's important to get through a summer because I think a lot of issues around composting, people are warning me, you know, about what's going to be under my sink now in the summertime. So anyway, I think it's let's get a summer behind us and then let's review the every other week pickup.
That's great.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, sewer, stormwater.
So if I could just introduce this, I want to first of all thank the Bureau of Environmental Services Budget Advisory Committee, as well as the Portland Utility Review Board for reviewing the Bureau of Environmental Services budget and actively participating in its creation since about November. I personally met with the Budget Advisory Committee at least twice. Right. And after months of work, we have landed a rate increase, which will allow the Bureau to continue mission-critical work while keeping the rate increase as low as possible. As reflected in the Mayor's proposed budget, the Bureau of Environmental Services is requesting a rate increase of 5.4%. This is well below the forecast increase in the Bureau's five-year financial plan, which was adopted by Council last year, and that increase, according to the five-year financial plan, would have been 6.4%. So the reduction from 6.4% to 5.4% is a savings to ratepayers of approximately $3.88 million. The Bureau is accomplishing this by eliminating 12.5 vacant positions, reducing merit increases, as well as cost of living adjustments. And additionally, I've asked the Bureau of Environmental Services to freeze all development-related fees, including stormwater and sanitary system development charges, land use review fees, and plan review fees. This means a $500,000 reduction in revenue to BES, but I also think it's important to do this because we want to encourage development. So freezing the SDC increases and our land use fees. So here to tell us more is Dean Marriott, the director, and Jim Hagerman, the business services manager.
Good morning, Mayor, members of the council. I'm Dean Marriott, and as the commissioner said, Jim Hagerman is here with me. We're going to fly through a very short slideshow for you, and I know you want to get to the testimony part. As the commissioner said, we need to continue to operate our system. As you know, we just completed a major capital program, and so we need to operate the new system. We need to maintain and reconstruct that part of our infrastructure which continues to age, and we need to complete the work we began a few years ago on our Greater Green Initiative to restore watershed health in Portland. And of course, we continue to represent the city in the ongoing Portland Harbor Superfund discussions and work. As far as revenue requirements, you can see on the slide, revenue requirements are estimated to be $265 million. A substantial portion of that is debt service, $137 million of debt service. The operation and maintenance, $92 million, and then utility license fee and other transfers to other funds are shown on the pie chart. Just moving to the capital program, we still have a robust capital program needs, $37 million for maintaining the collection system. Some parts of our system, of course, you can run till they break, but the collection system is not that way. If you run it till it breaks, it's dramatically more expensive to fix after it's broken. We have to improve our pumping and treatment system, continue to invest in our watershed health, and extend the sewer system to those properties that do not yet have sanitary sewer system. But our capital program, on the good news side, is probably going to generate about 1,300 private sector jobs. So the commissioner mentioned the financial plan started at, we were targeting about 6.4%. Initially in February, our submission would have gotten us to 5.9. We're now with, following the mayor's directive, down at 5.4%. This is a substantial reduction from where we were just a few months ago. On the proposed rates, I'm going to turn it over to Jim Hagerman, who will walk you through the proposed rates and the table with some details. Jim?
Okay, thank you, Dean. Jim Hagerman, Business Services Manager for Bureau of Environmental Services. As Dean mentioned, the rates are going up on average by about 5.4%. The sanitary volume charge will be about 58% of an average bill for a customer. That goes up from $32.96 to $34.88. Stormwater goes up to $23.90 per month. Good news is that following the arc of program activity, the Portland Harbor Superfund charge is decreasing by about 33%.
And let me just comment on that. That's because we've finished the investigative phase, which is what that was funding. We haven't yet determined how we're going to pay for any cleanup costs that we may be allocated.
That's true. That's correct.
Giving you a little more detail on the rates, there are a couple of things to take from this table. Number one is that the volume of consumption that we're seeing both from residential and commercial customers is down following historical trends. And what that means is that the rate is up by a bit more than the average bill, and that's outweighed by the reduction in consumption. In commercial rates, the increases are a little bit smaller. And in fact, if you look at extra strength rates, biochemical oxygen demand and suspended solids, those rates are actually declining. And that reflects the rollout of the enhanced extra strength fats, oils, and greases program at the Bureau, which means we're billing for more of these loadings to the waste stream, so the average cost is coming down. Well, there are some customers now getting higher bills. The large industrial customers that have been part of our extra strength program are seeing some actual rate relief here. And as I mentioned earlier, the Portland Harbor Superfund charge is coming down. Other charges, as Commissioner Saltzman mentioned, we're freezing the system development charges, sanitary and stormwater, at current levels, and it's true also of plan review fees and land use review fees. Line and branch charges are increasing, reflecting the costs of constructing lower sewer facilities. And finally, just a little perspective about where we are. You see where the green bar there, $59.57 for an average ratepayer. We are in the high end of the middle range in this survey, at least. You see the double asterisk on some of these cities. Those are CSO cities. Many of the cities higher than we are on the monthly bill are CSO cities. And there are some below us that also have those double asterisks, and we would expect in the next several years they will be higher than we are as well. We are pretty much finished with our program. Many of these cities still have years to go before they reach compliance. And finally, the sanitary system development charge at $4,355 for an equivalent dwelling unit. We are kind of in the middle of the range and staying there.
I think that concludes our formal presentation. Be happy to answer any questions you have, and of course, we'll stick around for the testimony part.
I have a question in response to the letter from Bob Salinger of the Audubon Society, who served on the Bureau Advisory Committee. Mm-hmm. The Budget Advisory Committee were asked to consider rates of 6.4, 6.0, and 5.5, and they concluded that a reduction to 5.5 could have a significant negative impact on mission critical objectives, particularly concerned about ongoing maintenance, as you expect, as you suggested, it's much more expensive to fix something once you have catastrophic failure. So certainly we all need to be fiscally responsible and keep rates as low as possible in these tough times. However, we also need to do that ongoing maintenance. Could you comment on the proposed rate at 5.4, and in particular about the Budget Advisory Committee not going that low?
Well, I think, as Commissioner Saltzman said, he met with the BAC twice, once in the fall and then once in January. And there was a very frank discussion about the city's budget process, and the BAC fully understood that they were going to immerse themselves for 90 days in a lot of the details. I think that's why they were comfortable with the 5.9% budget that we submitted in January through Commissioner Saltzman. They also were cognizant of the fact that decisions get made by the council in the spring, and they may not exactly reflect the work of the Budget Advisory Committee. So I took Bob's letter to be his sort of constant call for respecting the process and respecting the work that the Budget Advisory Committees do, and I think they every year they ask to have their work more carefully considered. So that's really how I took that letter.
If I could also answer that, since We're looking at the proposed, and I will, because I recognize who gets to speak, and I'm recognizing myself. The cuts out of the rate are cuts largely driven by cuts to vacancies, cuts to the overhead charge of the Office of Management and Finance, cuts to backroom operations. So the impact on programs in the Bureau are modest in terms of what we're cutting. Would you agree with that?
Yes, that's okay. Fine.
So in terms of the ongoing maintenance, we don't know yet, though, where those cuts. Is it true that the cut from 5.9 to 5.4 is entirely from the overhead changes with the cuts to Office of Management and Finance?
It's not entirely, no.
No.
Lisa, do you want to come up here, please?
So, because I'm really interested in what the range of services that might be cut, and I know you haven't refined that yet because
right.
this is a new proposal.
Right.
But what kinds of services are not going to be funded?
Lisa, can you walk through the one sheeter we gave every member of council in terms of where the rate reduction came from? And I think if the commissioner would refer back recollection on that sheet, you'll see that the reductions are to vacancies and overhead charges.
Certainly. Hello, my name is Lisa Shaw. I'm the financial planning analyst assigned to review the Bureau of Environmental Services budget. One of the cuts that was taken during the proposed budget had to do with taking vacancy savings from the Bureau and reducing vacancies, positions that had been held vacant. Some of those dollars have changed somewhat, but the impact on rates is still the same. There was a mix between operating folks and people that work on capital projects, and that reduced the rate. Additionally, the budget was reduced to reflect OMF central interagencies. The pass-through of those savings then was reflected in a reduction of rates, and that was a little over $400,000. And then also the merit, the freeze on merit increases for non-represented employees above $45,000. In salary, that also had an impact. That was about $100,000 worth of savings. And then there were two components to a cost of living adjustment savings. One was to reflect the difference in what had been originally the inflation rate that had been built in of 3.8%, and then reflecting that reduction down to 3.3%. And so that reduced BES's rates. That was a little over $200,000 in savings. And then the final piece was freezing COLA payments for non-represented employees above $45,000 worth of salary, and that was a little over about $570,000. So each of those had an impact in reducing the overall Bureau rate.
And that gets us down from 5.9 to 5.4?
Yes.
Thank you.
So, in short, as much as I love Bob, I don't think he actually read the proposed budget. Thank you.
And I would just like to point out before we go to testimony that, you know, throughout our budget deliberations, I was asking every bureau, you know, about their vacancies, because I think that was an important way to get at balancing our budget, all of our budgets, is to look at vacancies that are not filled, that are typically funded, and just sort of carried over. And in that spirit, I went back and I felt it was appropriate not only for general fund bureaus, but for the enterprise bureaus as well, water, sewer. And I went back and asked our people to come up with another, what turned out to be 16 vacancies on top of the 3.5 that were supposed to be eliminated. And those vacancies have, in fact, been put into this budget. So I want to thank the Bureau of Environmental Services for doing that. I know it wasn't easy to go through and figure out what positions you really don't need to fill. And so I want to appreciate that. Thank them for that. And it does reflect in a lower rate.
Correct. Thank you, gentlemen. Next, can we hear from Water and Water-Related Services? And then we'll hear from PBOP. Are you the sewer?
Yes.
I apologize. No, you come up first. My mistake. I'm on about 3 tablets of flu medicine today.
Now you tell me.
I'll sit here with Gordon so he doesn't feel alone.
Thank you, Dean.
Yes, thank you. Sorry.
Morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Gordon Feiner. I am the public interest advocate, member of the PERB, and also served on the BES Budget Advisory Committee this year. And you should have received a written summary of our recommendations. I'll go ahead and read through that a bit. PERB met last week, and at the time, the BES budget increase was proposed to be 5.9%. We agreed that that was reasonable. It's necessary to maintain existing infrastructure and provide capacity for critical issues that may arise in the coming year. We also asked that council direct BES to make cuts in the budget that were made in a way not to significantly affect programmatic operations that may have a significant impact on critical services. These were classified as cuts such as not filling vacant positions, and it seems that that's what BES came back to us with. In light of the revised budget proposal for an increase of 5.4%, we discussed online yesterday and agreed that given that the Bureau follows our guidance on budget recommendations that we made last week, that the cut of 5.4% would be appropriate. We appreciate the Commissioner's efforts to be penurious here, and I think that is appropriate. However, as a member of the BAC, I do need to reiterate some of the concerns, I think in a less forceful manner than Mr. Salinger raised in his letter to you, but primarily on the process of how these last-minute changes to the budget occur. Now, they occur in a manner that is after a point where the BAC has its final meeting, and it's after a point where the PERB can meet and address them in a timely manner. I mean, we had a meeting last Wednesday, which we thought was, you know, close enough to this meeting that we would have a more or less final budget proposal in our hands, and it turns out that there's an additional 0.5% cut that was made in the past couple of days. So I guess I reiterate concerns that I expressed last year.
Mr. PERB member.
Yes.
Just to be really clear, with all due respect to the PERB and the Budget Advisory Committee, the mayor has been proposing budgets in the city for decades.
Yes.
And so it is always, I'll protect the future mayor's ability to do so. So we take all of your input. The mayor takes all the input from bureau managers. We have public hearings. We hear from the budget advisory committees. We hear from PERBs and other organizations. And then in the end, the mayor makes a proposed budget, and I have to knit together all of the concerns that you and others raise with a whole bunch of other groups that also have concerns that relate to this bureau but might not be covered by the PERB's discussions or the scope of the bureau's advisory reviews. So when you say last minute, I just would respectfully push back on you and the Budget Advisory Committee with this idea that the mayor's proposed budget is decisions are somehow last minute. The mayor's proposed budget is part of the process. And everything up to the mayor's proposed budget is advisory. And then the mayor's proposed budget goes to the city council, who actually makes the decision. So it's not last minute. It is part of the process.
So if I could just intervene here. Mayor Adams, nobody respects you more than I do. And I know how hard you've worked on this budget, and I know you're not feeling well and you're tired, but I also think, with all due respect, people ought to be able to come forward and make their observations and not be challenged for them.
Well, you and I will have to disagree about that.
And other members of council should be able to do the same, and we'll make our own decisions based on the information we accumulate, but I really would
Thank you, Commissioner.
Appreciate it if we could just allow people to say what they want to say.
Thank you, Commissioner, and I will take that under advisement, but I also am not going to let pass yet again this notion that the mayor's proposed budget is sort of last-minute decision-making. It's not. It's a step in the process.
And we all understand that on council, but council members...
Is there any other member of council that would like to make comments?
Excuse me, I am speaking, but council members ought to be able to make observations and comments, and the public ought to be able to do that.
Absolutely.
And we should respect that.
And I do respect that. Thank you for the reminder.
And I think it was a helpful clarification, Mayor, that indeed your budget puts together all the input that we've heard. So I appreciated the answer to my question, and indeed you're raising this again. The things like the merit pay increases, the COLA, the changes to the Office of Management and Finance, which changes the agency interagency agreements, those affect this rate, but were not things that the PERB or the Budget Advisory Committee had input into yours. So what I heard in the answer to my previous question was that indeed your recommendations were respected in terms of the programmatic things that needed to be funded that are still here, and that the rate decreases at least the majority of it due to those other issues that the mayor put together in his package. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, and we appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Now we'll
and thank you, Gordon, for your service on the beat. Budget Advisory Committee and the Portland Utility Review Board. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner.
Thank you. So now we'll hear from Water.
Good morning. I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Portland Water Bureau. With me is Dave Hassan, the finance director for the Portland Water Bureau. Is it up? I can't tell.
We have the per person for water come up so I don't forget you.
They have the hard copy, right?
Mr. Mayor, you can't forget me. How could I?
Okay. So thank you for your patience. And we're also distributing a hard copy of the presentation for you as well. If you'd go to this next. So let's get started. I have a total budget proposed of $217.2 million. Of that, about 81.4 is my operating budget and $135.8 million in capital. That's down from $181 million that we had projected at this time last year. The big CIP projects that I have going on this year are the Emergency Coordination Center, the Interstate Facility Replacement, the Powell Butte 2 Reservoir, the Dam 2 Tower, and the Forest Park low tank. The remainder of my CIP is what I would refer to as the basic nuts and bolts, mains, services, hydrants, meters, that sort of thing. From a revenue standpoint, I will be through rates and charges, have about $141 million coming in. Of that, $119 is our retail revenue. Most of the people in this room, our wholesale customers, $17.7 million, $3.2 million in other fees and charges. That's when we install services, petition mains, reimbursable work, delinquency fees, that sort of thing. And then finally, $1.3 million in SDCs. We have a total workforce or full-time equivalent workforce of 624.8 people. If you look at the next page, the primary rate drivers of the 8.1% increase that we're looking at this year, and by the way, that's down from our projected rate last year at this time of 14.4%, are the CIP. The big portion of that is LT2. Obviously, we're not building a UV treatment plant. Our reservoir schedule we have proposed to push out. That results in savings. The OHA, the Oregon Health Authority decision on that is still pending. I do expect to receive something from them, if not at the end of this week, early next week. So I'm hoping by the time you vote, we will have heard in writing from OHA whether or not they will agree to our extension request.
That's Oregon Health Authority.
Yes, Oregon Health Authority.
And it's my understanding that the decrease is 2.4%, of which 0.4 is from not doing the ultraviolet, and 2 is from not doing extending the timeline. Is that correct?
I don't have that in my mind, but that sounds about right, Commissioner. Now, it has that some of those savings have been partially offset by increases in the rest of the CPI. As we mentioned at our rate hearing or at our council session last month, I have $5.5 million in mains, the Carolina Pump Main Project, as well as pump station improvements this year at Greenleaf and Sam Jackson. Other economic factors are the COLA. We've already talked, you've already heard about that. A lower COLA than projected results in savings. We have lower interest earnings. That's an offset. We have better borrowing rates. That's a benefit to us. Obviously, we still have 2 years to go on the deferral of the prior rate increases, so we're close to the end of that decision that was made several years ago. And our retail demand continues to be down. As Jim Hagerman mentioned a minute ago, we had a very cool, wet summer, and I believe last March was either the wettest on record or one of the wettest on records. And our LT2 variance monitoring. Because we did get the variance, we are looking at a relatively modest increase, and that's reflected on the next page. So the retail rate increase is approximately 8.1%. Our typical single-family bill, that's for the our average rate retail customer who uses 500 cubic feet of water per month, is $26.77. That's an increase of $2.01 a month over the current rates. Our proposal includes two decision packets. The monitoring to comply with the treatment variance requirements, that's 0.6%, and that's the staffing, the sampling and monitoring, additional sampling if necessary, and then some capital improvements on our key stations and auto samplers. And then the e-bill marketing. As you know, about 15 days ago, we decided that as opposed to having a mandatory monthly billing program for our 188,000 accounts, we would make it an option so people can sign up for the option of receiving a monthly bill. That had a major impact. Instead of a 2% rate increase, we're proposing a 2/10 of a rate, a percent rate increase. And the primary purpose of that is to do the programming that will be necessary for that, the outreach, the marketing, and to provide incentives to encourage more of our customers to participate in the e-billing and the auto pay system. Right now, only 3% of our customers receive an electronic bill. That's about a little over 5,000 people. Just under 9% of our customers do auto pay, where we deduct from their checking account or their Visa account. About 23% of our customers pay through the web, almost 23% by e-checks from their bank to our bank. But we still have about 42, almost 43% of our customers who write us paper bills. and receive a paper bill from us. So those are the folks that we want to target with a marketing outreach campaign and providing incentives to sign up for those.
And just to be clear, that's the e-bill option, or sorry, the monthly option will just be on the electronic.
We're looking at both, Mayor. The reason why we don't want to tie the two together is because there are some people who will still want to receive a monthly bill but will want a paper bill. So our goal would be to move as many people to e-bill and auto pay as necessary and not link it to signing up for monthly billing. We'll look at an incentive, however.
Are you going to be sending out monthly paper bills?
To people who sign up for monthly bills?
Yeah.
Unless the council directs us that we have to link it together, I would say yes. And I would discourage linking them because I think that'll defeat our purpose of trying to get more people on auto pay and still make the option available. There are people, for instance, if you look at the most of the people who are interested in monthly billing are the people who are lower income, who struggle every quarter to pay that combined water and sewer bill. Many of those people don't have access to computers, don't have access to the internet, and therefore wouldn't be able to take advantage of that option.
I just want to make sure that the 0.2% increase, which is different than I understood, takes into account anticipated costs related to paper monthly billing as an option, does it?
It does indeed. If we have just 5% of our customers sign up for e-billing, they're going to save us $26,000 a year, the cost of sending them the four bills that they're currently getting. Now, if that same 5% of our customers opt for a monthly billing, our costs can go up by as much as $85,000 because we're going to be sending them eight more bills. So we're looking at providing those incentives to say, we want you to sign up for e-billing, sign up for auto pay. And that's the purpose of that 0.2%.
Hey, I'd like some more details on that.
Okay.
We do have a member of the Technology Oversight Committee who I think the mayor agreed should come up and talk about, at the right point, come up and talk about their review of this whole issue.
They were anticipating doing that, and we assumed that would happen after the PERP.
Sure. Okay.
If you look at the next page.
He's actually coming up now. Why don't you come on up?
Ben, yeah.
And since this is on being discussed at this point.
So if you look at the next page, number five, typical residential monthly bill, as I said, is going up $2.01 to $26.77. The low-income residential monthly bill increases by a dollar from $12.38 to $13.38. Medium commercial customer, that's like a small grocery, a QFC, large McDonald's, increases to $27.27 to $363.86. Portland water bills represent only about 5% of the average utility services for residential customers. If you look at the next page, we have a bar graph. And one thing we did miss in the box up in the upper left-hand corner, on solid waste and recycling, it should say biweekly pickup, not weekly pickup. But if you look, of all of the utilities that we typically use, water is the cheapest of those utilities. Now, obviously not everybody has the same numbers. Not everybody has a cell phone, not everybody has cable, but these are the numbers that we have put together from surveying all of the local utilities. I went through this last night with my own budget, and other than the fact that my cable is much more expensive and I spend more on cable, this pretty much reflects me as well. It is the average, it is not everyone, but I can tell you that water of all of these utilities is the cheapest.
So I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think there is some clarification that we need to have on the subject of e-billing and monthly billing. So can we go back to that, and can you go back to that slide?
Yeah, it's
I just want to make sure that given that the mayor is believing what he's hearing doesn't reflect what the discussions were that we had that were all on the same page, because I want this to roll out correctly, because I think the strategy we developed is a really good one, and I think people will take advantage of monthly billing. But what the mayor just said, and I don't know that I disagree with his recollection, was that we were going to tie the attempt to get those who want to have monthly billing to only be able to do so if they received it via e-billing. Because the idea is, and when this, if you recall, when we started this entire effort to go to monthly mm-hmm. billing, I've consistently felt that the costs were overestimated, but they are what the staff says they are. But my instinct was there are more people than what we may realize that have access to computers that, were they to know they could get their bill via the computer, would happily do so. And secondly, the other issue that we've talked about that we haven't talked about here is the other option that would allow your bill to arrive at your financial institution online via bill pay, which we are implementing as well, and we didn't mention that. So I think we need to clarify that part before we go sure. on, because I don't know that I disagree with the mayor's recollection of what our discussions were, and I'm not sure that I understood that we were going ahead with incentives to create monthly billing that allowed people to get that bill via the mail versus just electronic.
No, there are no incentives being offered to sign up for monthly billing. The incentives,
e-billing. You're right.
Those are what the incentives would be for. So, yes, we
but
could.
But I think. I guess just to finish the thought, I think I agree with Sam that we don't want to offer monthly billing unless people take advantage of receiving that monthly bill via either email or their online banking bill pay option, where the bill would actually arrive in their bill pay.
We can absolutely do that. That will, I think, have fewer people take us up on that option. But yeah, we could absolutely do that. And we will even, for those of our customers who are not interested in signing up for that monthly bill, we will still be looking at trying to incent more of our customers over to e-billing and auto pay. Absolutely. But the reason why we didn't want to link monthly billing to e-billing is because of those people who really do want that option but don't have the ability to sign up for e-billing at the same time.
So I'm wondering if any of you happen to have any stats on, do we know how ubiquitous computers are in people's homes? My sense is that if people actually don't have one, they have access to one.
No, I don't. I can tell you that our market penetration isn't particularly big. As I said, we still have 42% of our customers write us a physical check.
Right.
That's pretty big amount.
It is, but if you recall, as we discussed this, it's been harder than it has up till now to figure out how to get to e-billing. But part of what we've been doing, Sam, is having meetings on how to make that easier and come up with ways so right. that there's a one-click option so people can figure out how to navigate to sign up for e-billing, because I think it's been unduly difficult to do that.
Yeah, I just, Director, I worry about, and you can give me detail that I shouldn't worry, but I worry about offering a paper monthly billing option, because it just inherently in my mind means a lot more staff time and a lot more complications. Just sort of that's my intuition by just offering that as an option. And if we didn't offer it as an option, doesn't mean it couldn't be added later, but as we ease into monthly billing option E transaction, you know, you can allay my fears, but that's based on, we spent a fair amount of time on this in the with folks, and we thought that the 0.2% would provide the potential for incentives like we did the downspout disconnection program, modest incentives, great response. Again, we're not necessarily solving all the problems that, and one of them you've raised, but the cost benefit was I thought we had landed it monthly electronic.
We can certainly do that, and you can make it as what we would refer to it as a soft rollout, where if over the course of the year, and you'll see that the TOC is recommending that we come back a year from now and see how